And just like that, we're back with the Buffer Podcast, and it's a new month. It's June 4th, 2021. Sometimes it's hard to believe that we're a year in, well, more than a year, still in a global pandemic, but I think about where we were a year ago. And Joel, we were not doing this podcast, although we probably should have.
So I was doing my my talk show that I had created last year in the pandemic for my local sports talent. You know, I was actually, that debuted last week, a year ago, and I interviewed the Muscatine Muskie softball coach a year ago yesterday.
Wow.
And they just pulled off, this is super local, so I apologize, but it's monumental. The Muskie girls, which you being a school district employee might be interested, they're ranked number one now in the state in the largest class. Wow. They defeated the number one team in the class 3A, Davenport Assumption, 3-0 tonight. So
that's exciting.
Huge, huge team here. Softball's huge in our community. I was down at the ballpark earlier tonight. My daughter had a softball game. So, yeah. So a year ago, I was doing, you know, local sports talk, Zoom radio or Zoom show for Coach's Corner type stuff. So,
and I remember, it's funny that you say that, because Facebook memories popped up a couple of days ago when I was your guest and we were talking about
the last dance
with Michael Jordan and the team. So yeah, I can't believe that's all a year ago. And it's amazing how many things can change in a year. And I know this is an audio medium, but I have a beard, and my mom, Sheila, shout out to her, said tonight, Are you going to trim it, or what's, like, what's you the got plan?
You got the mom questioning of the facial hair. That's,
she's like, what's the plan? It looks hot. And I'm like, this is just a month's worth of growth. And if anything, it's just to have I usually have a goatee, but now I'm kind of like, nobody's saying anything at work about facial hair, which is kind of nice. So I might just do what I want and grow a beard, a summer beard. I don't know if a summer beard in the Midwest is good.
But I've had the summer beard. I kind of did it last summer. My wife hates beards, so it's a hard sell anytime I want to go full beard. So if you've got spousal support, have at it.
Yeah, so far that support has been there, and I'm happy for it. It is crazy to be, you know, this podcast releasing on Friday, June 4th, which would mean that we're, you know, 30 days away from the 4th of July. And locally in the Midwest, we're experiencing some hot weather for the first time. And
you got to 90 today.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I was ready for it, and then here it was. And as the weather continues to heat up, the content just continues to be great. One of the things I just want to comment on, because you and I both became really big fans of Mayor of Easttown, and they had their season finale
Kate
Winslet dies.
Well, I was going to say,
Jack gets his revenge.
If you want to talk about a good segue, talking about spousal support, holy smokes. Was there some spousal support in that finale with Lore? And again, spoiler. Lore, you know, covering up for her husband and son. Like, that's,
yeah.
I mean, God, this is one of the best TV shows I've seen probably in my entire life.
I was really satisfied with the ending of Mayor of Easttown on HBO and HBO Max. It kind of buttoned up the whodunit with the death of a teenager, a young person that also had a child. So it kind of took us in one direction. And then I kind of, not that I called it, I think everybody was predicting or expecting some type of twist, and there was. But then you would have thought that was the conclusion of the episode of the season, but that happens early on.
It was like nine minutes in that John confesses to the murder and being the father of the child.
And then we get this very satisfying ending and a lot of character development from Mayor Kate Winslet. And it ended with her heading up to the attic of her house where her son had committed suicide to kind of come to terms and address it. And it was beautiful. It was poignant. I don't know. I don't have anything bad to say about the whole series. And that's rare. Like, I don't like to nitpick per se, but I usually will find something that I can go, you know, to make me a little bit of a cynic, which I'm not by nature, but did you have anything that you felt like was not, you know?
No, I mean, I'm trying to think of so many final episodes for Prestige TV are so disappointing. Right. And now I think the ones that have been the most disappointing have been, you know, there's been longer routes, you know, Game of Thrones with so many seasons, Lost with so many seasons, The Sopranos with so many seasons. This was only a 7-episode limited series. So they didn't have as many routes to tend to, so to speak. But I think one of the things that was so fulfilling about it is that final episode, you get closure on her relationship with her mom. That scene with Jean Smart and Kate Winslet at dinner, where, you know, Jean Smart breaks down as Kate Winslet's mom and says, do you ask her for forgiveness? And she says, yeah, I forgive you. And, you know, Jean Smart loses it because she's like, good, because I've forgiven myself, you know, a long time ago. That was such a powerful moment. And then you also have, I think the unsung hero of this whole series is David Denman, who played Kate Winslet's ex-husband, Frank. And he's been in my life for so long. One of my favorite movies, you know, as a freshman in college was The Replacements, where he plays the deaf tight end in The Replacements. Then he plays Lance in the iconic comedy Out Cold. And then he's Roy on The Office for so many years. And so David Denman, in my mind, is this tremendous comedic actor. And here he comes rolling in, balding, out of shape. You know, he's always been like the bigger, handsome guy in everything that he's been in. And he just shows, oh, yeah, by the way, I went to Juilliard and am a classically trained actor. And I can share the screen with Kate Winslet and actually win on some scenes. And I think to have that steadying force and that he was so good as well. And I think it's so easy to talk about the tour de force performance that was Kate Winslet as Mare and how she completely was consumed by and that role. I think you needed those buoyancy points through the rest of the cast, and every single actor in this show rose to the challenge, and if not, you know, maybe exceeded expectations. So just brilliantly cast, brilliantly acted. I heard an interview with the creator of the show, and just watch it if you haven't seen this yet. But how the creator of the show said the theme that he really wanted to have be the undertow and the what this is rooted in is mercy. And they did such a great job of that. And I think that that is something that we as creatives, and it's just when you can create a feeling of mercy in your writing, I think it's one of the hardest things to do, because it's one of the hardest concepts to give someone is mercy. And so I really appreciated him saying that, because once he said it, it kind of put everything into focus for me. And it was such a brilliantly, brilliantly executed show.
Great cast, great production. Was interrupted by COVID, picked it back up. They buttoned it up well, good ending. The only thing my wife, who just walked out of the room, said that she's still mad that Evan Peters got killed, which was a great moment on the show. And again, yeah, if you haven't watched Mayor of Easttown, you should. It's on HBO, HBO Max. I don't think we'll get a second season, and I'm okay with that.
There's nothing left to do. It's a complete story.
It's a beautiful 7-episode performance piece of art that you can consume. And if it's on your list of things to watch, bump it to the top. A couple of other things I just want to mention really quickly before we get into the battle. Since it is a new week for us here at the Buffer Podcast, as you're listening to this, hopefully this weekend you're going to go to your local theater and see a couple new releases like The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It in theaters and on HBO Max. And then on the family side of things, you've got Jake Gyllenhaal lending his voice to Spirit Untamed. We've seen the preview for this. My daughter is 2.5. She's like, horsey. And I think a 2.5-year-old is not going to do well in a movie theater. So I don't know if we'll make it to that, but I can tell you with 100% certainty, I will watch The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, and it will scare the bejeebus out of me.
You can tell me all about really it. Good. You can tell me all about it, because I won't.
It looks really good. And then I just wanted to comment on something that I saw this week that kind of surprised me. Speaking of COVID and the pandemic, one of the things I put into the battle on the Buffer podcast was Wall Street, the Mark Wahlberg reality show on HBO Max. It kind of touched on the production that he was doing of a movie called Infinite, which I believe is an Antoine Fuqua directed movie. Unbelievable director.
He did Training Day, right? That's his.
Yeah. I think so.
I think he did Training Day, and I know that Ryan Coogler, I believe, he started working for him. I do know he did Training Day.
So Infinite this week was announced. It's going to be on Paramount Plus. So again, as we continue to talk content on the Buffer and streaming services and subscription-based streaming services, Paramount Plus steps up to the plate and says, oh, by the way, if you want to see a Mark Wahlberg blockbuster, you're going to have to check out Infinite on our subscription-based Paramount Plus service. The last thing I'll mention just for Joel's sake, and we can go quick
just,
on this.
Just for my sake.
Is next week's biggest release, and it'll probably do well, is In the Heights, June 11th. I know you're excited. I'll probably, if it's on HBO Max, I'll check it out. I don't know if it is. I know they're kind of getting away from that.
It is. It's going to be.
Okay. So I know you're excited about that, and that'll probably be what you put in the Buffer battle next week, although I don't know.
Well, I think I'm going to save that discussion for at the end of the month when we do the movie musical panel. That you're welcome to join, but I know that I'm giving you the option to avoid. It might be fun though, because there are going to be some people on there who have a really fun time making fun of me and have a lot of stories about my early collegiate days. So just real quick, Antoine Fuqua, just to give you his IMDb a little bit. The Equalizer.
Can I guess one of them?
Yeah.
Did he do Man on Fire?
If he did, I don't think he did.
I don't think he did. Damn it. All right, go ahead. Sorry. Equalizer.
So Equalizer, one of our favorite experiences together in the theater, The Magnificent Seven. One of the most underrated Jake Gyllenhaal performances of all time, Southpaw. Olympus yes. Has Fallen, Brooklyn's Finest, Shooter, the movie with Mark Wahlberg. So he's worked with Wahlberg before. Tears of the Sun, Training Day, Bait. He did the Usher Live documentary.
I've seen that.
Yeah. Read The Replacement Killers. There's a really good underrated movie from the 90s. So, yeah.
By the way, Coolio.
He directed the Gangsta's Paradise video for Coolio.
Oh, that's amazing. But he did the Magnificent Seven remake.
Yeah, with Denzel. So he and Denzel have worked together a lot. So.
And that's, of course, just a real quick fun story. I was in Santa Fe for a wedding, and they were filming.
You've told this on the pod before.
Have I? Yeah. All right. So anyways, I yelled at Ethan Hawke, and then I had to apologize to Ethan Hawke, and I met Vincent D'Onofrio, who is a guest on this week's episode of Armchair Expert, which is another great podcast that you should check out. Vincent D'Onofrio and what's his name from Armchair Expert, Dax Shepard, surprisingly like really good friends. And I know I'm talking about another podcast, but sometimes you think like, yeah, I get that famous people are friends with other famous people, but man, Vincent D'Onofrio, I'm telling you, as someone that met him and talked to him on two separate occasions at the same resort, he seems like, and I mean this with all due respect, he seems like a very unique person. And maybe that's why him and Dax are friends, because Dax also seems very unique. But I was pleasantly surprised by their rapport, and it was very enjoyable to listen to. And Vincent D'Onofrio, also in The Magnificent Seven, has a glorious beard. And hopefully you'll check that out if you haven't. All right, we got to get into the
So Buffer. Dax Shepard, his wife, comes up in my guilty pleasures for this week.
Wow, a Kristen Bell guilty pleasure. Okay, well, we're going to get right into it. So if this is the first time you're listening to the Buffer podcast, the Buffer battle is when Joel and I will pit two pieces of content, whether it's movies, TV shows, documentaries. We're going to put them up against each other. And this week's is definitely, I would say it's a little unique, but it's certainly two separate genres of content, but both very good and both drawing a lot of attention and headlines for the battle this week. And I believe, Joel, you're going to get us started.
Sure.
And this is going to be tough for me, because I have a lot of strong positive feelings about what you've chosen. So it's going to be hard for me to make the case for my selection.
So I as tempted as I was to spend the extra money on the Disney Plus Premier membership to watch Cruella, that's not what I'm bringing to the battle today. And that was, I was scrolling through Twitter on Memorial Day weekend, as I had been on vacation with my family, and I follow Patton Oswalt on Twitter, and he said, stop what you're doing and go watch Bo Burnham's Inside on Netflix right now. And that's all the tweet said. Mm. And Bo Burnham has a history on this podcast. One of our first iterations of this podcast, we reviewed and went and saw his Eighth Grade movie that he wrote and directed. And so I was a big fan before that. That movie really piqued my interest in him as a creative creator, as a director, as a, you know, a visionary of some ideas. And I also always like this comedy because I like him as a musician too. He's a very talented musician. So I started up this Netflix, not reading anything about it, not even really watching the trailer or whatever. I just fired it up, and it just comes right out the gate with him singing a song like, what if I told you that a year ago today I'd be sitting by myself. Like, it's kind of these weird, like, alt. What I liked so much about it is that this blended performance art, kind of alternative comedy, and Weird Al Yankovic songwriting, not parody songs, but just like really humorous interpretations and song, and put it all together in an hour and 27 minutes of just absolute compelling entertainment. It goes very dark at some moments, and I don't want to spoil it too much if people haven't seen it yet. There's earworm type melodies that he writes that are in this musical. There's a real social consciousness to this piece. And it's almost watching a little bit of someone go into the madness of what it was like to be maybe quarantined by yourself. Cause we both were very fortunate to, you know, have families to share this last year with. Not everybody had that. And I'm not sure that Bo Burnham, he's not married. He doesn't have a lot of people, I guess, living with him and with the research that I've done. And fascinating, a man with his camera, his keyboard, and a real mastery of how to shoot individual cinematic feature. It was just brilliantly done. And I can't even describe it, I think, to its best, because I was speechless. I truly was speechless as I was watching it. I couldn't even articulate how good it was.
It's interesting that you started this take and putting Bo Burnham's Inside into the buffer battle by saying that it was Patton Oswalt's tweet. And that's, if you go back a couple episodes of The Buffer and listen to when we talked about Derek Delgadio's unbelievable Hulu performance, that's how I came across it too. It was actually on TikTok, and it basically said, stop what you're doing and go watch this. And sometimes that's the best. Like, you can read reviews and you can find something after the fact, but when you can experience a movie, TV show, comedy special, social commentary, whatever it is, just like in its purest form without any preconceived notions, it's such a great feeling. It's kind of like, and this is not the same thing, but it just makes me think of how excited I was in 2008 when The Dark Knight was coming out, and I watched the first teaser trailer, and then I saw nothing. I refused to watch anything else, and I'll never forget the immersive experience I had in the theaters. Bo Burnham's Inside is compelling. I remember being on the radio in 2007 and 8 and 9, and all of a sudden there's this kid in his bedroom and he's Bo Burnham going viral on a website called break.com, which is also where the comedic likes of John LaJoy, who I've interviewed, who is on
The League.
What was that show? The League, right. So Taco from The League. But Bo Burnham had this crazy right place, right time, internet, one of the first people probably to go super viral. And now he's 30. And like you were saying, he dealt with a pandemic that totally impacted his business, which is comedy and performance. And I think what, to echo what you were saying, Joel, is our experience with the pandemic was very different here in Iowa, regardless of your politics. Like, we were never as locked down, shut down as places like California, where people like Bo Burnham and even our friend Mike Bridenstine, host of Hunk with Mike Bridenstine, the podcast, couldn't do a lot of things at all. So we were fortunate. Right. We were both working. I was working in full time in a grocery store.
Well, you and I both during this whole time have been working in what is deemed to be essential work. So even if we were in the full lockdown, you and I would have still had our normal job to do because we were either in education or the food chain.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see how it impacted people like Bo that are creative. And obviously Bo is at that I don't want to say that he's like a savant, but he's clearly a genius. And I don't think it's bad or faux pas to call him a genius, but his mind, to watch how his mind works. And one of the reviews or the headlines that I read about Bo Burnham's inside is that it kind of like, he kind of nails everybody. Like, nobody is safe, so to speak. And if you have a decent sense of humor, let me just say this. If you're the same person that comments on social media, that Saturday Night Live hasn't been funny in like 30 years.
Yeah, this is not for you. If that's you.
Yep it.
But if you watched Andy Kaufman lip sync to the Mighty Mouse theme song on TV and thought that that was hilarious, and you appreciated him coming out as Tony Clifton, or you appreciate some of these other alternative comedians, this is going to be your dog whistle. You're going to enjoy this. If you can appreciate the art and not just punchline.
Exactly.
Stephen Wright's a great example, because even though he doesn't sing, he has a melody, he has a cadence, he has a monotone that is as impactful as what might be a techno beat underneath some really creative lyrics about white women Instagram. So it's there are moments where I don't even think I laughed out loud. My jaw was just dropped. I usually am watching this stuff later at night. My whole family's gone to bed and I'm laying down on the couch. I sat up and literally was on the edge of my seat watching this for the hour and 27 minutes. It drew me in so quickly. And it's not just jokes. You're watching really, I felt a cinematic masterpiece. The way that he was using multiple cameras and bringing you into the production. Like, you can see how he shot it. You can see how he did some of the production. There's monologue, there's song, there's, you know, produced bit. The bit about the live stream video game where he's, that part was brilliant. It was so brilliantly done. I cannot praise this work enough. It might be the best thing I've seen in 2021.
It's really good. It's hard to put anything up against it in a podcast that features a battle, so to speak. But and it's because I feel like I've had a really good relationship with Bo. I've enjoyed his specials. We both enjoyed that Eighth Grade movie immensely.
I went back and rewatched it after watching this, because I was like, his sensibility speaks to me. It's almost Jason Reitman like, where there's, not saying they're the same or have a similar, but you know you're watching a Bo Burnham produced thing, just like you know you're watching Jason Reitman. And the dog whistle speaks to me. So I'm in on all things Bo Burnham, I think, from this point forward.
It's definitely, I would say it's a compliment to compare them. And I feel like I'm gonna try and make the case.
So this is young upcoming fighter going into the ring against long-standing, you know, maybe past their prime a little bit, but still a heavyweight fighter of the championship quality. That's what this is. It's young up-and-comer against seasoned and just good old, you can't go wrong with your choice.
I just want to say that I am a nostalgic person, and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion on HBO Max, that's not what I'm putting into the battle. But the way that that started was so compelling. And that's exactly the way that the Friends Friends, the reunion begins on HBO Max. So this came out or dropped Memorial Day weekend. And I would consider myself a fan of Friends. I would say that, and I would be comfortable sharing that. But I'm a bigger fan of how do you do something? How do you pull something off that so many people are looking forward to? Because you have to remember, folks, Friends back in the day was one of those TV shows that it wasn't just like 3 or 4 million people are the NYPD Blue, the thing, it was appointment viewing at its finest. And I loved how Friends, the reunion started with each of them kind of coming on to a reconstructed set and sort of getting to watch them marinate and have a lot of emotions over it. I also want to say how great it was to see Matt LeBlanc because, and I'm going to be careful how I phrase this because it's not an insult to Matt, but I felt like Matt LeBlanc, who played Joey, would look like that's how I feel like I would look if I showed up to a Friends reunion. Like, he doesn't seem like he's affected by any of this fame. At one point, he was making $1 million an episode on this TV show. And then he just kind of rolls in and you're like, good for you, Matt LeBlanc. Like, not that anybody, they all look good. And it was great to see all the other cast. But I was really, and I feel like people have been taking shots at Matt LeBlanc on the Friends reunion special on HBO Max. But it was great to see them, and they all got together, and then they kind of started to go through, you know, their experience from getting cast on the show to the overnight success, and then of course we've all been able to follow their careers and their trials and tribulations. But and it's interesting. And the last thing I'll say briefly is just that I'm 37 years old, so Friends wasn't like super like it wasn't very relatable to me when it started. But as I got older, I think I grew to appreciate it that much more. So if you are a fan of Friends, you've seen it by now, you know that Lady Gaga shows up and does a rendition of Smelly Cat.
I haven't seen it yet. I actually haven't had a chance to watch this yet. So,
if you're a detractor,
you can spoil it to me. That's fine.
Okay. Rachel dies. No, if you're a detractor, right. If you're a detractor, Doc, what are you doing? Sorry, I just had to yell at my dog for a second. If you're a detractor of Friends, you're not going to like it. So skip it.
Which I'm not. I am not. It was, high school, you'd watch it on Thursday nights. You'd watch Friends. You'd watch whatever show. Usually it was, I think Seinfeld followed it. And then you watched ER. And I remember sitting in the high school library at Muscatine High School. But that's where we would kind of congregate before school. And you would talk about, you know, did you see, I mean, whatever shenanigan it was. Did you see them trying to poke the naked guy with the stick across the way? I mean, like, just little things like that. And then I lived in an apartment in college where there were six girls who lived across the hall from us, six guys. And we kind of had that Friends approach where we never locked our doors. You would just walk into each other's apartment. When we would run out of toilet paper, we would sneak over and if they were there, we'd have to distract them to figure out a way to steal their toilet paper because we didn't want to go buy our own. Just all kinds of stuff. And one of them, the girls got a Friends board game to play, and it was the hardest trivia game I've ever experienced in my entire life. So I have a real soft spot for Friends. I mean, you can't grow up when we did in the 90s and early 2000s and not have it be. You either loved it or you hated it. I was in the love category.
It was so nice to see and remember all the guest stars, because certainly as a show like Friends takes off, the desire for people like Reese Witherspoon and Brad Pitt.
Well, John Favreau. Do you remember John Favreau? Right. Was the billionaire boyfriend of Courtney Cox.
Tom Selleck shows up in the reunion. And what's fun is, as someone that's hosted a Friends trivia night twice, I know that people are really diehard, and they do Friends trivia with the cast. And I'll just say, you know, again, it was great to see everybody. I don't like when we take pot shots at people. Like I mentioned, Matt LeBlanc was kind of getting some guff. And then people were kind of poking fun at Matthew Perry. And I think he's been pretty public with the things and the struggles that he's had. It was great to see him. And I wish all of them well. That being said, for the purposes of this podcast, this is really tough to try and plead a strong enough case as to why Friends, the reunion should advance against Bo Burnham's Inside. Now, they're both definitely in the national conversation. A lot of people have watched, millions of people have watched both. You could say that Friends, certainly, there's probably more people worldwide that if you said, are you familiar with Friends, the TV show? Rachel and Ross, and they would say yes, versus if you said Bo Burnham.
Oh, sure, 100%.
But as far as comparing, like, the two pieces of art, Bo wins night and day. I mean, it's not even, it's well, not the, even a thing to compare.
So I read where Friends still, so it went off the air 20 years ago. 2001 was that its final season?
I think it was 2014. Oh, no, really? Sorry, 2004.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It's been 17 years.
So 17 years it went off the air. It still is making $2 billion annually in syndication worldwide. I remember being in the Czech Republic in 2005 and watching Friends on like Czech Republic television in overdubbed in Czech and watching the subtitles. Wow. And so, but the six leading cast members get 2% annually of that syndication. That's their contract. So they're making $20 million a year still in syndication. So there's a reason that Matt LeBlanc hasn't had to do a damn thing. You know, there's a reason that Matthew Perry can be selective and, you know, he's made some terrible choices, but then he makes some great choices on shows like Studio.
City on the Sunset Strip.
A great show. Underrated show. Just didn't get picked up. I mean, so there are,
Studio City on the Sunset Strip was like what 30 Rock became, right?
It like, was like, well, it was like West Wing. It's like, it was like West Wing for Saturday Night Live. It was a dramatic.
But why look. Didn't it, like, I don't want to talk too much about it because, but I was all in on
that show. Same. Bradley Whitford and Matthew Perry. It should have worked. It just didn't. But oh, well.
It was.
I'm
was
just,
really
I'm
good.
Just glad that my pick is working and that I've won this week because I've lost several the last couple of weeks.
So
thank
Bo
you,
Burnham.
Patton Oswalt, for steering me in the right direction.
It's impressive that Bo Burnham, as one person by himself in a room that's starring, filming, producing, editing,
he did everything. He's
going to knock out
everything.
Six people on a giant conglomerate of a show. But you're right. I think if we're looking at it in the terms of a battle, there is no doubt, even in my mind, as the person that's bringing Friends the reunion, Bo has to move on.
All right. So that is that.
You could even say that Bo knows how to win a battle.
I was showing my oldest son Bo Jackson highlights on YouTube this weekend because we were getting ready for the Olympic trials are coming up for swimming, and my son's a swimmer. And we were talking about Michael Phelps and, you know, these great swimming athletes who are about ready to watch in the Olympics. And I was like, yeah, but I still think that Bo Jackson's the best athlete I've ever seen do anything in sports. And so we had to watch that. So you saying Bo knows reminded me that the universe is all connected and we can't escape each other.
Well, we're going to come right back on the Buffer Podcast. But in the meanwhile, we're going to check in with Bo Jackson during this break. Hang on. All right, we're back. It's the Buffer Podcast. It's the 4th of June, if you're listening to this. Hey, you could be listening in the future. Maybe it's June 4th, 2050, or 2080, or 2100, and Joel and I are both long dead, and you're like, wow, this podcast was pretty good from 2021.
Or if you are traveling with a time travel machine and you want to go back to the future and the almanac, I need to look up. Don't bet on the Knicks. Whatever you do, don't bet on the Knicks. Did you see that game the other night?
I didn't, but I heard about it.
Trae Young's phenomenal. I've gotten into this NBA playoffs, and you're a basketball person too. The Portland game the other night, Dame Lillard, double overtime, 54 points on 24 shots. 54
so
points on 24 shots.
Yeah, I love basketball. I had a great chat. Insider poker, whatever.
Inside baseball?
Inside baseball. I had a great basketball chat with Toby McCarter a couple weeks ago. So shout outs to Toby Carter.
We need to get your
listening.
Buddy Bobby Hansen, the color commentator voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes and former teammate of Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls, on the pod.
I do love basketball.
I think we could get Bobby on. If we could get Bobby and Dolph to talk Hoosiers,
they would do it.
Yeah.
And I would tell them why Hoop Dreams, the documentary, is better than Hoosiers, the movie. But that's neither here nor there. All right. So we're going to get into our buffer guilty pleasures when Joel and I share things that we're watching that you might not be inclined to openly admit at the water cooler at work or with your friends. But on this show, it's okay. And since you led the battle, I wonder if I can go first with my buffer guilty pleasure. So obviously I like to eat and I like to watch people make food, and the Food Network is something that I still find myself enjoying, and one of the shows in particular, because I got to watch it live in person when it was in Rock Island, Illinois.
You always have some sort of personal connection.
I know, I'm sorry, but it
are you
Restaurant Impossible is a show that I was a fan of before I got to see it happen, and Chef Robert Irvine, and they're back. They just had a brand new 2-hour episode of Restaurant Impossible, and it's kind of like comfort food. You know what you're going to get. You know that, like, they're going to help out a struggling restaurant. You know that there's going to be characters involved. You know that Robert Irvine's going to come in with a short shirt on and just suns out, guns out, and he's going to try and help them and be a little stern, and you hope for the best. But it's a guilty pleasure, and I'm so happy that it's back because the pandemic had shut down their production. But it seems like we'll get a full season of Restaurant Impossible.
And it'll be interesting to see. I like that show too, but you might have the situation that's like, you know, the pandemic shut us down. We've got to fix this or we're going to have to shut it down forever. So you might have some of those storylines pop up too in that series. I like that show quite a lot. It's I'm a sucker, like I said, for a good cooking show myself.
My wife was on an episode of Restaurant Impossible. Ooh. Because we were sitting at I don't think it was Goomba. Anyways, long story short, Rock Island, Illinois, there was an episode. We went to it. We sat at the bar. I kind of snuck our way in.
Well, this is when you were big
Robert
time
Irvine's
radio host,
right there.
Right? Well,
this is, yeah, but this was early. So this was kind of at the start of the second phase of my radio career. It was 2013. It was an interesting experience to watch them film this show. And my wife appears in an episode of Restaurant Impossible. And that's my guilty pleasure for the week. And I'm okay with admitting it.
So I kind of hinted that my guilty pleasure has to do with Dax Shepard's wife, Kristen Bell, earlier on in the podcast. And I think I've mentioned this show before in passing on the podcast before, but I just really kind of deep dived into it the last couple of weeks. And that is the show Encore on Disney Plus, which is Kristen Bell is the host, and she wrangles up old high school musical casts. And, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, they do a new production of the musical as adults that they've, you know, they've played as high school students. So it's just kind of fun to watch these. Some of them, you know, some of these kids go on and they, you know, get classically trained and they try to be professional performers. Other guys and women are just like, they're a real estate agent in a community, and they come back and they, you know, they play Annie or whatever. It's just kind of fun to watch. It's a cool concept, and with someone who likes musicals like I do, it's kind of entertaining. And I would love if they would to bring back and we could do a production of Hello Dolly like we did at my high school, and I could be waiter number 4 who had to do a major pratfall in the middle of it. I definitely was underutilized in musical theater my first 3 years of high school. I got penalized for being an athlete as well, and for not being able to devote all of my time to the performing arts realm. I'm sorry that I had to also letter in 4 sports as well as, you know, be a pretty outstanding musician, if I might say
well,
so myself.
I haven't seen the show, but
shocker.
I like Kristen Bell.
She's great as the host. She's so good and warm and welcoming and
yeah,
encouraging.
That's what I was gonna say. Like her personality
Plus, she's with... so damn good as a singer and as a musical theater performer. She's
and I don't think I knew that until Frozen, and I'm okay with saying that. Like, I didn't know that she could sing, and I don't know if a lot of people didn't know that. Yeah. Again, I don't know. But yeah,
I think you can't be a Disney kid and not be a triple threat. I mean, she was what Veronica Mars was her big, you know, child role.
Right. Yeah.
I just you don't get put in the Disney stable unless they are saying, okay, let's start them here, and if it doesn't work, we can move them to this type of piece, or if it takes off, then we can just leave them in that lane. Like, there's, I auditioned for Disney, like the Disney parks and the Disney cruises when I was in college, and it is very well organized, that whole organization. So, I mean, when it comes to their performing arts and their shows, you don't make the cut there unless you are, unless they know they can move you into multiple pieces at some point.
Yep. And that's why I think when you find yourself at a Disney park or place like that, and you're like, man, that person that's portraying insert Belle from Beauty and the Beast is immensely talented. Like,
yeah, they're some of the best of the best. Like, it's nuts. One of my college,
a good gig.
One of my college professors, that was his first job out of college, was he played Little John and Captain Hook. And he got to be Goofy a couple times as well.
Wow.
And he's like, it was, you know, rigorous training. He did it for a year. And then he was also in like one of the barbershop quartets that would perform at Disney World. And but, you know, great, great first job out of college.
It's awesome. Yeah. I think it's absolutely fantastic. All right. So we're going to head straight into the Buffer Confessions, and Joel's going to lead us. But as we always do, we're going to enter the Buffer Confessional right now.
Confessions.
I'm drinking a Fresca.
So that's Fresca, secret. That is a total singer hack. Fresca is what you drink when you've got a bunch of stuff and gunk in your throat, because the citric acid that's in Fresca is higher than other citrus sodas, and it actually can help dissolve like mucus that might be on your vocal cords and in your sound production mechanism. So Fresca.
So the Coca-Cola cuts. Yeah, I was going to say Coca-Cola company. We would love to have that Fresca money as a sponsor.
So, and Fresca is a great drink on a hot day that you might have in the summer. And our confessions, we were thinking of big summer movies and summer movie releases. And in 2001, a movie came out in the summer that was a smash hit, and for some reason I didn't see it, and I still haven't seen it, and that is Wet Hot American Summer.
Holy, a movie
that I have never seen, and I'm not going to say it's plagued me, but I know that so many people, it was a big seminal moment in their comedic career. I think Amy Poehler was in it. I think Paul Rudd was in it. But I've never seen it. 2001, I got my first high school baseball coaching job, so I spent all summer pretty much doing that. So I didn't see it, and I've never seen it, and I probably should, but that's my confession. Wet Hot American Summer, not seen it.
So there's a lot of things that we talk about on this show that, like, it's okay to admit in the confessional something that you haven't seen. And then we will sometimes say, like, you should run out and watch that immediately, or you're probably okay if you. Wet Hot American Summer is unbelievably, it's so great. It was like a total flop when it was released, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I saw it when it came out, because that's not the case. I was maybe a couple years.
It was kind of a cult classic then. Is that how it became to be?
Oh, 1,000%. Okay. 1,000%.
I don't feel as bad now.
No, but just like a murderer's row, as you reflect back, Michael Showalter, Paul Rudd, Janine Garofalo, Amy Poehler, Elizabeth Banks, Bradley Cooper.
Who are these people? I don't know who you're talking about.
Molly Shannon, Chris Maloney, Michael Ian Black. It's not only is Wet Hot American Summer, you personally, knowing you as well as I do, will love it. And you'll rewatch it. But it's so layered. Like, there's so many moments that upon first viewing, it's like the definition of rewatchable, if I may. And then the best part is it was gone. Like, they made it, it came out, it was a flop. Then all of a sudden it has the second life and it's the definition of a cult classic. And then there's a limited Netflix series and it's unbelievable. Like, I'm here to tell you that Wet Hot American Summer, whatever it was called when it came to Netflix, was so, it was nostalgia fest, but well done. Such a, you have to see Wet Hot American Summer. You owe it to yourself. Don't watch it with your kids.
No, yeah, I don't watch anything with my kids. I always watch things first. And
there's some tough, there's just some scenes that, you know, but Wet Hot American Summer.
Are they at a camp? Is that what it is? Like, they go to camp?
Yeah.
They go to, are they counselors?
Camp counselors.
Oh, so it's got a little bit of a meatballs kind of.
It's just.
But not.
Really good. I'll check it out. Really good. And it's criminally, I don't want to say it's criminally underrated because it's not anymore, but it's kind of like Office Space. I mean, Office Space kind of had the same experience. It came out, it was not a critical box office success, and then all of a sudden it started to grow. So that's an excellent use of the buffer confessional, but I would tell you to like watch that this weekend if you have time, because it's that good. And I don't know, I'm assuming it's on Netflix. I don't know where it's at, but it's so good that it would be worth paying like $5 to $6.
And I just see now on our Google Doc that we use to organize our show what you. I just can't. I'm dumbfounded. I can't believe what you're about to confess.
Well, listen, I think there's some things when we talk about those summer blockbuster movies. And I was thinking about this, and it's one of those movies that I feel like I know enough to be dangerous, and I don't think, you know, you don't put baby in the corner, if I'm not mistaken. But I have not seen Dirty Dancing in its entirety. I feel like I've seen 20 total minutes of Dirty Dancing, maybe less.
Have you seen the final scene at least?
Well, I've played the song enough in my DJ life.
How many times have you seen someone try to do the Dirty Dancing lift drunkenly at a wedding reception?
Yeah, well, I tried to do it with my wife's friend's dad at her wedding, shout out to Brian Burns, and it was moderately successful. So yeah, Dirty Dancing, I'm putting baby in the corner. Now that's not from Roadhouse, right? Like, that's Dirty Dancing is baby in the corner.
Yeah, that's Dirty Dancing. Yeah.
Okay, so Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey,
Jerry Orbach,
right?
I mean, it is, man, so good. So good.
Is it better than Wet Hot American Summer?
I don't know. I haven't seen Wet Hot American Summer.
There's certainly two polar opposites. But yeah, that's why we do the confession on the buffer, is to admit things that we haven't seen. We're not perfect. My wife has probably seen Dirty Dancing 100 times.
Same. I've probably seen it. Gosh, I mean, my high school girlfriend, it was her thing. So.
Really?
Yeah, saw it a lot.
All right. Well, I'll put it on the list of things to watch, and I'll report back once I do. That'll be my homework, so to speak. All right. So before we get out of here, dress socks and Crocs, and we're going to cue our friend Slappy Pappy as we get into parenting and life wins.
Dress socks and Crocs.
A segment on the buffer where, you know, life intersects with this show, and we both have multiple children and full-time jobs, and things happen along the way, and it's just, sometimes it's just ridiculous. My dress socks and Crocs moment happened this evening. As we're recording this, it's 10:05 Central time. I was in my garage, and I was moving some things around. My mom was over, and she had taken my three kids for a walk, and I heard them getting closer to the garage, and my six-year-old son Ted said, "Dad, look what we found." And there was a dead bird on a shovel.
Well, at least it's on a shovel and not in his hand.
And I was like, "Oh, why and what are we going to do with the dead bird?" And my mom, God bless her, was like, "Well, we'll just put it on the grass." And I was like, "I don't know. Like, I don't want to put it in my garbage. No offense, dead bird." So anyways, long story short, dress socks and Crocs. there's a dead bird somewhere on my property, and I didn't kill it. So I didn't kill Petey. I just wanted to put that out there. But my
animal rights activists will be happy to know that.
My mom must have encouraged my son to grab a plastic shovel, and then what do you got to? I got to like disinfect the shovel. Yeah,
you really got to bleach that thing down. But dead birds so, like, carry I feel all like, kinds of diseases and stuff.
I feel like moms are the best, and well,
She knows she doesn't have to clean up. And then for me, my dress, socks, and Crocs moment was I had to be in frigid cold water at Lake of the Ozarks all weekend because the kids still wanted to swim, and it was 68 degrees in the water. So, but someone has to do it, and it sure as hell wasn't going to be my wife. So, so I got to jump in, and it was like a cold tub and didn't have any swelling. And I'm getting texts from upstairs that apparently my dog really needs to go out. So we need to wrap
Perfect.
Up here.
So. Okay. Well, listen, then we'll get out of here. I thought you totally froze up on me.
Dumped, but thankfully I've got the SD card, so we should be good. Everything should have come through clean.
All right. Listen, friends, here's what we know. This week's episode of the Buffer Podcast has come to an end, and Bo Burnham's Inside on Netflix is moving on in the battle. And Joel and I will be back next week as we have continued on. I think this is like 12 or 13 fresh episodes of the Buffer in a row, and that's the plan. And we hope that if you're enjoying the Buffer Podcast, that you'll rate, review, and most importantly subscribe to the Buffer Podcast wherever you get your podcast, including places like anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. And Joel, it'll be fun to see what comes into the Buffer battle next week as we continue the month of June.
See you later, everybody. Bye.
Good night.